Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. Now, when you do extensive afterlife research, and I've been doing this for 50 years almost, you reach two inevitable conclusions. The first one is that it's obvious that the evidence fits together so perfectly over nearly 200 years through so many varied kinds of evidence that it is impossible for it not to be right. But the second thing you conclude is that even in the 21st century, the scientific gatekeepers still will not allow any of the scientists they control to even look at the afterlife evidence, that is, unless they're going to try to debunk it. So, well, we can prove now that human minds are eternal, and we can demonstrate that there is a greater reality that's just so much greater than this physical universe and actually includes the universe. We can demonstrate all of that. However, you and I are going to have to figure all of this out for ourselves. This problem of willful scientific blindness, together with its causes and its solutions, is going to be our topic today. And our guest will be your host. Look, it's tragic that for the past century, science has been just another belief system. That belief system is materialism, or you might prefer to call it atheistic materialism, but it started out as just a straightforward, we're materialists, that's all we study. You could see this in print 100 years ago. Frankly, at this point, they're a little too embarrassed to put it in print, but it still exists, this same foolish, delusional dogma. Effectively, 100 years ago, science stopped pursuing the genuine truth and became a really peculiar religion, atheistic materialism. So for all that time, no scientist who hoped for a traditional career could even consider any kind of inquiry that might lead to the conclusion that reality might not be, in its very essence, material. Think about that. For all this time, we've been trusting science, and for all this time, it's been walking past, ignoring, or trying to make go away massive amounts of evidence that bears directly on the most important questions in human existence. Frankly, at this point, the ongoing enforcement of materialism as the fundamental dogma of science is beyond inexplicable. It's crazy. Why should the institution we trust so much to investigate the truth let itself be handicapped by any dogma? It doesn't need a dogma. And what is a dogma, anyway? A dogma is an enforced group belief. You can look it up. That's what it is, an enforced group belief. Secular people ridicule religious folks for having enforced group beliefs, right? But yet they don't seem to complain at all about the fact that for a century, mainstream science has effectively been just another enforced group belief, another kind of religion. Isn't that incredible? We think of religion and science as a dichotomy, but they're not. Almost nobody is looking at what the truth is in an unbiased and open-minded way, except for a group of people who started out investigating the afterlife. What we found when we did that was a whole greater reality, which we are talking about little by little on our shows every week. We talk about different aspects of what is an enormous brand new science. But this is all absolutely beyond the ken of actual scientists, except for a very few brave souls who chose not to have traditional scientific careers and instead are in fact pursuing the truth. They're heroes. 100 years from now, their names will be celebrated. We'll be interviewing some of them as the weeks go by. But to this day, all the scientific gatekeepers exclude from the realm of improved scientific inquiry anything that might even hint that reality is not fundamentally material. And what's especially amazing about this is the fact that by now every working physicist knows what quantum physicist Max Planck and his fellows realized a century ago. In fact, reality simply is not material, not at all. Nothing whatsoever is solid, but as Albert Einstein himself said, what we call matter is just another form of energy. So the fundamental scientific dogma of materialism turns out to be just as flat out bogus and stupid as was the Catholic Church's long ago insistence that the Earth had to be the center of the universe. Remember that? This was a big deal hundreds of years ago, and we still laugh at the church that there was ever a time when they insisted that that the Earth was the center of the universe and the sun orbited it. Think about that. But to this day, the mainstream scientific community worships another dogma, which is every bit as stupid, clueless, misleading, delusional, and frankly dead-ended. And the consequences of that, frankly, are much more serious for the world than were the consequences of the Catholic Church's brief delusion before it was straightened out by Galileo and others. I'm sorry, I'm rendered inarticulate. I don't even know how to explain to you how this could be happening to us now, but it is. We'll be talking about it today. Unfortunately, not nearly enough time to talk about all of it, but there are many, many areas of this that we will be exploring in the months ahead as we try to ever better, rub their noses in it a little bit. I don't know what else to do. How else can we help people who are well-meaning people? And I'll be talking in the next segment about how we got into this mess. I think you have a right to know that, and I'll tell you what we've learned as best I can. But how did we get into this pickle? How can we get out of this pickle? And how is it possible that educated, I mean, we're talking PhD types, are allowing it to go on to this day? A whole century that could have been very productive scientifically has been wasted. That is tragic. It's tragic for you and me, but it's really tragic for the scientists. It's tragic for the scientists whose careers could have been brilliant, but instead were blighted by this nonsense. It's difficult to imagine how a later and more enlightened age might even look back at our present confusion. What were we thinking? We are going to look as foolish to them, frankly, as the Middle Ages type folks who were Catholic and believed that the Earth was the center of the universe. We're going to look as foolish as those people look now to us. I'm going to try to make this as simple as possible because, frankly, physics bores me, and I'm sure it bores you too, but it's not so much about physics as it is about how it all gets applied. What are the facts we've learned from studying the afterlife, which turns out, in fact, to be a whole new science, and how do we apply them to some of the problems that scientists now are, frankly, dead-ended at? It's impossible to move ahead on a faulty premise, just as they couldn't figure out how to deal with reality. The ancient Catholics couldn't when they thought the Earth was the center of the universe. The same exact problem could confront scientists, and their job is to figure stuff out and fix stuff. We think there has been a lot of progress made in the last 20th century, right? Most of it's been technological progress. There are so many dead ends that scientists cannot figure out, from the hard problem of where consciousness comes from to the simple, fascinating problem of dark matter and energy that I'll be talking about later. I'll try to make this fun, but before you can really begin to make sense of what actually is going on. It's going to be very important you understand how the scientific community you've been relying on for truth for your entire life has been flat out lying to you. And also what you and I might do about it now. Now, before we look at some of the ways that the fundamental scientific dogma of materialism, and yes, you can find those words in print, we're going to look at some of the ways this is screwing everything up. But first, let's ask when and how science stopped being an open-minded search for the truth and became just another belief system. Well, here's a surprise. In fact, science never really has been an open-minded search for the truth. Scientists are just people, after all. They have personal wishes and biases and a need to be liked in their little own little in-groups, and they need to make a living. That's probably the most important factor. Always keep these facts in mind, though, and please feel sympathy for them. The upheaval in understanding that scientists are about to face is going to play havoc with everything that matters to them. It's going to happen. There's no way around it. We're going to talk later on in this hour about what's about to happen. But who is it that continues to stand against the truth anyway? Who polices what scientists study? Well, we call them the gatekeepers. There basically are three or four. The university departments are big. If you want to be a scientist, you kind of need to be associated with a university. If you're associated with a university, especially if you don't yet have tenure, there are a few tenured professors who are venturing into this field a little bit. But if you're looking for a job in a university, you've got to study what they say you're going to study and teach what you say that they're going to, that they say you're going to teach. And if you don't have a job. Remember, they need to eat. So the university departments are very important gatekeepers. Then there are the peer-reviewed journals. The peer-reviewed journals are where you need to get your papers published if you want to progress in your career. And they will not even attempt to do peer review on and publish anything that might in any way challenge the materialist scientific dogma. So those are your two main gatekeepers. You can't teach and you can't get published if you're trying to venture a little perhaps into the field of what reality actually is, and it's beyond what they want you to talk about it being. Thirdly comes, of course, the funding, because everybody needs to be funded. All the university departments need to be funded. And the funding sources tend to be corporations and foundations. Now, the corporations usually fund research that's going to be something they can use to make money, obviously. Drugs is big, and things that that they somehow can monetize is what they're likely to fund. Foundations are probably going to be, because they're generally being run by people who come out of this scientific echo chamber, they're probably also going to insist that their money be used only to investigate improved materialist sort of based theories. And really, it's these sort of four things, the university departments, the peer-reviewed journals, the corporations that are trying to make money, and the foundations that are trying to get brownie points. They're the ones who are keeping us ignorant. So I'm tempted to blame them, but when I complain about this to other people who have probably more historical knowledge than I, they say it goes back a way, way bit farther than that. They say it goes back at least as far as Plato and Aristotle. More than 2,000 years ago, perhaps almost 2,500 years ago, we even back then had a division between materialist stuff and spiritual stuff, two sets of truths. It made sense to them back then because to them, spiritual and religion were the same thing, and they were trying to sort of investigate without a religious bias. So naturally, we separated out. You go study your spiritual stuff, and we'll study our material stuff. Made sense back then. So this division between material and spiritual ways of looking at what is really the same reality has existed for all of modern human history. It's embedded. It's entrenched. The fact that it's stupid and useless and counterproductive now, even much more now than it ever was, is nothing we can do anything about. That's the way it is. I was very surprised to first encounter this problem when I was looking at the late 19th century and early 20th century communications through deep trance mediums. We had a flood of very good communications. It came to us pretty sudden, with a pretty sudden onset, very end of the 19th century. And there were good, solid researchers, some of them with scientific credentials, who were studying what was coming through these deep trance mediums, writing books. And they believed they were doing cutting-edge science, which, of course, they were doing, weren't they? This was all new information and exciting information. It was a great source for me of the information that I put together to determine an initial view of how reality is put together. But this was a bridge too far for scientists. They didn't want to know about this stuff because they were dealing with quantum mechanics around the same time, and that was already upending their materialist view much more than they wanted to. So this is when we first began to see the words fundamental scientific dogma of materialism, those exact words, in print. About 100 years ago, within the first, around 1910, 1920, that range. And at that time, it made sense to those people. And the problem is that it doesn't make sense anymore. And it has been possible now they have double and triple and quadrupled down on what is really an old failed system. It's as if, medicine insisted that whatever else we do, we've got to keep bleeding the sick. It makes no sense now, but they're so invested in it. It is something that they're so involved in that to back up is going to be impossible until they're forced to do that. I realize that you're thinking, who is this woman? What is she saying? All right, this is the problem we have. The greatest physicists 80, 90 years ago understood already that nothing was material. I'm not introducing something radically new to scientists. Let's hear from the two leading physicists of the 20th century, barring none. Max Planck, who got the 1918 Nobel Prize in Physics as the father of quantum mechanics, said, "As a man who has devoted his whole life to the most clear-headed science, to the study of matter, I can tell you as a result of my research about atoms this much. There is no matter as such. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force, which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. There is no matter as such." Max Planck said that in 1944, actually. What about Albert Einstein? What did he say? All right, he said this: "Concerning matter, we have been all wrong. What we have called matter is energy, whose vibration has been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter." Albert Einstein. There is no matter. They both said the same thing. By the way, he got the 1922 Nobel Prize, but he needs no introduction. So, hearing from these great leading lights, and by the way, I've had scientific friends irritated with me that I give these quotations, but they said these things not once, but many times. They understood what the quantum physicists had found. And it's just beyond my ability to comprehend why science has just doubled and tripled down on stupidity when the leading lights have been trying to lead them out of it. This need the scientific community has that matter be material is the reason why they can no longer figure out pretty much anything that's not technical. But it's easy to fix. They just have to open their minds. Fortunately, afterlife studies is a genuine science. We learn from it a lot more than just the fact that human minds are eternal. In fact, what afterlife researchers are discovering is a whole new physics and a host of related scientists that derive from that new physics. It's a gigantic new way of studying a greater reality that turns out to be entirely consciousness-based. Let's talk about what some of what afterlife researchers are learning about how reality works. It's amazing what you can figure out, even if you're not a scientist, if you just are not handicapped by dogmas and you are simply curious. Here are three big points. First, we now know that everything is energy, nothing is solid. If the White House were an atomic nucleus, where it is and about the size it is, the closest electron to it might be as far away as Denver, and there would be nothing in between. And even those particles that make up the nucleus and make up that electron, they're just vortices of energy, little tiny whirlpools. It's all energy. And this is something physicists all know. I'm not saying anything that would surprise them. But everything is energy. The second important thing that we deduce is that the only thing that exists is this energy, which is actually closely related to, or maybe even the same as, what we call human consciousness. And it's immensely powerful. This is Max Planck's great insight. He will eventually be credited. The truly greatest thing he ever did was to discover the genuine God. And he'll be credited with that someday when science begins to get a clue. That consciousness energy, which is all that exists, is immensely powerful, and it includes an infinite range, apparently infinite range, of vibratory rates. So what we're learning does fit very nicely with the quotations I've just given you from Albert Einstein and Max Planck. And third, and this is fun, for a variety of reasons, we're coming to understand that the base energy that is all that exists, that consciousness energy, is governed by what you and I think of as emotion. How hysterical is that? The more loving it is, and if you don't like the L word, just say consciousness's affinity for itself. The more intense its affinity for itself is, the more powerful it is. The more fearful or hate-filled that energy is, the weaker it is. This is fact. So can you see how materialists, in their obsession with materialism, have everything completely backwards? They think that emotion is just an artifact of your mind, and they think your mind is just an artifact of your meat brain. They truly believe this stuff, even though they have no clue how it works, and they never will find a clue because their whole idea is wrong. Actually, though, it's opposite from what they've always thought. Emotion is primary. Your consciousness simply interacts with your brain. It's never anywhere near your brain. And your brain turns out to be nothing more important than a two-way radio in the head of a meat robot. So this is where we are. Do you see how different reality is turning out to be from what scientists persist in? I mean, I never wanted to take physics. I never got past algebra 2. I hated numbers. I still don't like math. So I've been doing hobby, you know, fortunately now in the 21st century, we have a lot of quantum physics for dummies books and other kinds of physics for dummies books. And I've been doing a lot of reading. And I've come to have a very slight understanding of what some of the theories are. The big problem physicists have now is that they cannot find a way to unite Newtonian physics with quantum physics. And not surprisingly, I can tell you what unites them. It's consciousness. But since consciousness is kind of a spiritual word, a non-material word, they won't go there. Eventually, though, that will be the theory that unites Newtonian physics and quantum physics. But foolish things. I mean, they've got something called string theory, which I don't understand and don't want to understand. But it involves, 8 or 9 dimensions, 13 or something like that, which is pretty close to the number of which we are aware, actually. But because it's got to be material, we're materialist scientists, they assume that all of the ones that we can't see must be teeny tiny dimensions. Not true at all. I'll be talking shortly about where those dimensions are, and they're actually in the room right with you, and they're even bigger than the universe. So do you see how all of this is easy actually to understand? You and I can understand it just fine. And the only problem scientists have, just like those Catholics 500 years ago, is that they've been told everything has to be material. Those Catholics have been told the world is the center of the universe. So if you see stars doing funny things up there, you got to follow the dogma. You can't go beyond the dogma. It is absolutely as foolish, as nonsensical, as silly as that. But there's a way to fix it, and you and I think, are going to witness some amazing things over the next few years, and it's going to be exciting. But as I say, have some pity on the scientists, because it's not their fault that their gatekeepers are keeping them to doing clueless stuff in the dark. Now, let's talk briefly about just how badly the fundamental scientific dogma of materialism is hamstringing modern scientific inquiry. We're going to have time to discuss just one example of how science has tied itself into knots, but in later programs, I'll go into some other examples, because there are a lot of them, and they're kind of amazing, especially if you have some understanding of the greater reality, having done some afterlife research. It's astonishing how clueless they are. I just want to say, though, that it is tragic that scientific gatekeepers who determine what gets taught and what gets published have forced most of three generations now of professional scientists, some of them brilliant, some of them could have had great careers, have forced them to waste major parts of their careers in the pursuit of doomed theories and ephemeral materialist nonsense. Today, let's talk about a big and obvious way that applying a materialist dogma makes it impossible for mainstream scientists to solve what's actually a pretty amazing problem. This is my favorite of all of these, you know, weirdnesses that they have put themselves in. The mainstream scientific community tells us that everything they're studying, which is all of material reality in this whole universe, everything that they study makes up less than 5% of what they know exists. They call the other 95%+ of what exists, quote, dark matter and dark energy. Now, that doesn't mean it's evil. It's not dark because it's evil. It's dark because it doesn't interact with photons of light. It neither gives off light nor reflects light. What does that mean? It means it's not material. That's what it means. It doesn't interact with the light, which is a form of matter, in that it's got photons. It's got little quanta of light. It doesn't interact with that. It's something else altogether. That's all it means. So scientists know that more than 95% of what exists is beyond what they can study, and they know it's not material. They know this. So what are they doing about it? I mean, I would think if we were trying to study 95% of your house or 95%, really, if you wanted to understand anything, you would not discard more than 95% of whatever you were trying to understand, would you? I mean, it's just common sense. You've got to understand it all. Well, they have effectively ignored it. They call it a whole separate area of study, and they have no clue how to approach it. And you can see that for them to enforce materialism as the fundamental scientific dogma in the pursuit of dark matter and dark energy is going to make it impossible for them ever to understand dark matter and dark energy. By definition, it's not material, and they're only going after it. It's like you're trying to understand a color, and all you have is a microphone or a light meter that doesn't see color. You have to be able to search for it in a way that makes it accessible. The best they seem to be able to do, and this is in a universe in which everything really seems to be breathtakingly efficient, to vanishingly tiny tolerances, they look for dark matter, especially. They hardly have begun really to look for dark energy as far as I can see, but they look for dark matter, assuming it's garbage particles. That's little quarks and nuons, whatever, gluons. I don't know. They have all these kinds of particles it might be, and they're trying to find them. And of course, they're getting nowhere. 95% of reality is not going to be garbage. I think that's something we can just take at face value. So here we are. We've been studying the afterlife, discovering we've found a greater reality, and we have some information from that. What might dark matter and dark energy be? Well, 27% of what exists about is dark matter. That is about as much as we would imagine if we assumed that in proportion to the physical universe, if we assumed that what that was actually the areas where the dead reside. That's very close, because there are seven levels, roughly major levels of afterlife, and each of them is about the size of the universe, we think. So I think we're going to find that dark matter is actually at the astral areas, at the non-material reality, which we know already is most of reality. That's simple. But the 68%, more than two-thirds of what exists is dark energy. What the heck is that? Well, here's a clue. When I was 8, I saw spiritual light. It's much brighter than sunlight, and it's white. Now, last summer, maybe it was 2014, summer of 2014, it was announced that they had discovered that 80% of the light in the nearby universe has no source. Someone said it's like walking into a big barn, has no windows, and just two teeny tiny little 60-watt bulbs, and you're looking around because it's very light in here. Where's the light coming from? Well, all right. Two-thirds of what the scientists know is real is energy, which is not material, and 80% of the light comes from some source. Now, do we have a match there? I saw spiritual light. What else could that be but spiritual light? So do you see how sensible it begins to be when we don't limit ourselves to studying only what's material? In point of fact, I think eventually it's going to be determined that dark matter is the non-material aspects of this level, this area of reality. We think, frankly, there are many similar universes now. I don't think we can imagine the end of it. But it's since we know that the afterlife levels exist, it would be logical to be able to detect them. And that 68% is probably, almost certainly to me, I can't imagine it would be anything else, the source energy giving off light and giving off love. This is what we are finding, and the scientists will not even look at it because it's not material. How sad this is. Now, I'm not sure that's right. I can't wait for scientists to wake up and start looking objectively at these things because maybe they will be able to give us some better insights. But we have an explanation, and that explanation comes from objectively studied evidence, and it makes sense, and it fits rather neatly. So wouldn't you think that some scientist somewhere would be desperate enough to venture an inch or two? I mean, maybe he's got tenure. He doesn't have to worry so much about losing his career. Because the scientist who figures this out using the evidence that comes from the dead is going to get a Nobel Prize. The scientist who comes up with a consciousness theory of everything and shows how it works is going to get a Nobel Prize. And the dead are able to tell us. Those who are in charge of this planet are higher level beings not now in bodies, and they tell us we're on a course to destruction unless we can elevate this planet's consciousness. So they're working on that, and they're working with many people now on Earth. As a first step toward elevating the planet's consciousness, it appears they have determined to break down the barrier of ignorance. That's the only thing still separating us from those we used to think were dead. We're going to be talking in a few weeks with some of those who are assisting the dead experts on this end. But the real researchers who are working to create really excellent, solid electronic communications between here and there include the greatest scientific minds who have ever lived. Albert Einstein, Nikola Tesla, Niels Bohr, my beloved Max Planck, to name just a few. They have decided to build a hardwired system which is going to allow you to call up dead Aunt Martha and get her recipe. And that is big. And frankly, their set of solutions is already in beta testing. What's wonderful is the beta testing they have determined has to be done is between parents and their dead children. That has to come first. We don't know really why, and we're going to be talking in a later program. I don't have time tonight to talk about how this system works, but they have children right now, every day, talking to their their loved ones here on Earth. Imagine the joy, if you've lost a child, of hearing that child's voice saying, "Hi, Mommy, I'm fine. I'm going to play now." The joy of that is beyond our ability to tell it. And I wonder perhaps if that's why they are so insistent, because it's very humanitarian, of course, but also it's a very good way to get the word out, because parents are going to talk and they'll talk big. Now, we don't know for sure when this is going to happen, but let's imagine for a moment that the dead experts are right. And within the next few years, there'll be such good electronic communication between us and those we used to think were dead that anyone who still continues to insist that we are nothing more than artifacts of our meat brains is going to be laughed right out of the public square. What will happen then? I think what's going to happen is there'll be a lot of retirements of scientists. There'll be a lot of probably recriminations. There'll be shakeups in a lot of university departments. And there are young, and I hear from some of them, there are young physicists, young scientists who are desperate to begin to be able to work in this field. I think we're going to find within 3 or 4 years of when it becomes impossible for anyone to deny that the dead survive. Within just a few years after that, I think you'll find that the university departments will be largely revamped. I mean, it's taken us 100 years of grubbing around in the weeds, but I think that the future is just about to dawn, and it's exciting to be part of that. One of the people who is working now on making this happen is Nikola Tesla. And he said, when he was on this side, he said, "The day science begins to study non-physical phenomena, it will make more progress in one decade than in all the previous centuries of its existence." Now, to me, that is a pretty big claim, but it's an amazing and fundamental and exciting thing to contemplate, that we'll have progress by light, you know, light years, tremendous amounts of progress very quickly, and we'll discard a lot of things that simply don't make sense. I mean, this separation that still exists between spiritual and material, quote, facts, is an artifact of the time when religions would interfere in science. I mean, it's primarily meant to be a barrier against religions. But at the same time that mainstream science is being broken down, and I've talked about this on other radio programs, I want you to remember, you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you fully grasp what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Our guest next week, all the way from Sydney, Australia, is going to be the incomparable Wendy Zammit. Wendy and her husband, Victor, are the world's greatest living experts on the afterlife evidence. Their book is terrific. It's an Amazon bestseller. A Lawyer Presents the Evidence for the Afterlife. It's the best summary in print on the subject. And their weekly Friday afterlife letter contains news you won't find anywhere else. You can sign up to receive it for free at victorzammit.com. Wendy and I are going to be talking about their voyage, including their battle against the scientific debunkers who've been desperate for the past century to keep the truth hidden from you. This is an amazing story. It's going to be in your great-grandchildren's history books. Please join us for a preview of that amazing story next week, and you'll love Wendy, and she has the cutest accent. Now, this week, your guest has been your host. The most appalling thing about this extraordinary time in which we live is the fact that both of our most trusted institutions have altogether failed us. Neither Christianity nor any other religion is able to help us at all in understanding reality, and it turns out now that mainstream science is about as bad off as the religions are, and for the same reason. It's not even looking for the whole truth. It wants to consider only whatever fits its own materialist dogma. And that's especially tragic when even most scientists themselves now know that nothing is material. But thanks to some of the greatest minds that ever lived and still continue to live, Our long ignorance is about to end. We'll be talking about that shortly on a soon-to-come episode of Seek Reality. Now, as you know, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, Flying High in Spirit, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. And you can find recent episodes of Seek Reality on bbmglobalnetwork.com. And episodes that go back a few years are being rebroadcast now on Dream Vision 7 Radio. I find that fun, actually. I'm hearing from people who are just hearing for the first time some things that we recorded a couple of years ago. And it's really kind of fun. And it's fun also for the guests that we had then. Some of those are really fantastic. I hope you'll listen to them. They're all on iTunes. Just look for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. And if you ever lose track of where I'm broadcasting now, go to robertagrimes.com. If you want to read my blog, please do, robertagrimes.com. And you can contact me through robertagrimes.com. I do answer all my emails every day now. I'm hearing from people, and I love hearing from people who have questions, comments. Several people, but for various reasons, I had missed something that I had said on the radio, wanted clarity. I mean, it's just so much fun. I love interacting with people. I always say, if you don't hear within 24 hours, send flowers. I think it's important to stop and realize that there have been scientists over the past 100 years who have found the truth. Max Planck is my favorite. He said some brilliant things, and he was fearless about saying them. One of the things that he said, of course, is that science advances by death. So he expected by now we would have gotten rid of all the people who were resisting the truth. And sadly, that's not yet true. But he knew what consciousness is. He said in 1931, I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything we talk about, everything we regard as existing, postulates consciousness. Isn't that what I just said? That's what afterlife researchers have also found. The fact that, and scientists call this the hard problem because they can't figure out how the brain generates consciousness. And that's, you know, for the same reason that whoever's looking at your oven can't figure out how it generates electricity. I mean, it's irrational to be thinking that the human mind is generated by a few pounds of meat. That makes no sense. And that you come into this world and learn so many things so quickly. It just defies common sense. It's incredible to me that we're still stuck where we are. But as I say, not for much longer. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.